Good evening, and welcome to the Liminal Space Podcast. This evening, I had the pleasure of speaking with John Ballantrae. John isn't a fan of self-introduction, so I'll tell you that he's a brilliant gentleman, professional tarot reader, and a teacher. Tonight, our conversation covered a wide spectrum of ideas, theories of experience, and approaches to tarot. I'm positive you're going to love this episode. I have to warn you, however, and apologize for some technical difficulties at the beginning, but after that, I think it went pretty smooth. John's contact info can be found in the show notes, along with other resources that he spoke of. So let's get to it. Please, enjoy.
Okay.
I'm going to press record because I don't want to miss anything. I can edit out if you need to. But, I agree with you, and everybody has their own way to get to where they're going. You're right. But my question is, I think maybe some people by hearing another person's journey, maybe helps them define their own. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I went to university in Glasgow, and then I finished, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I thought, okay, I'll go to teacher training college because you know that if you can, you do. If you can't, you teach.
Sorry.
So I was going to go to, it's called Jordan Hill in Glasgow, and I was sitting, I had a summer job sitting guarding gasworks. And there was one rainy night, I was sitting in a truck sheltering from the rain. And I thought, I don't want to go to Jordan Hill. I'm going to find a job I can find anywhere in the world that will get me out of Glasgow. And the following day, I looked in the London Times and they wanted history graduates to teach in Switzerland. So I applied for the job and got the job. And that sort of set me following my nose sort of and just seeing where life takes me or took me. And so one thing led to another. And now here I am sitting in a basement in Brampton, Ontario, talking to you. I don't actually know why you invited me on. I don't know what you do really or what use I can be to you or what use I could be to your viewers.
No, your videos. I stumbled across your videos and they're extremely useful. And that took me to your website. And I see that you have a business on here as well. And so I thought maybe if my audience like what they hear, maybe this will take them to your YouTube channel, which may in turn lead them to your website. And you offer readings and you offer classes. Do you still offer the classes?
Do I show up at the classes?
Offer the classes.
I don't understand your question.
Do you still offer? I mean, you still offer.
Offer. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a membership. See, the thing is, I think I'd like to give it all away, but I have bills to pay, so I need to charge something.
Sure.
But really, a lot of the stuff that I do on videos on YouTube, I mean, I think it's really good. I did this thing, the last one I did, and I think it's interesting for anybody. If you listen to yourself when you're talking, you discover you know an awful lot more than you think you do. And a lot of times we tell ourselves what to do, and then we immediately censor ourselves and stop listening to ourselves. So we end up not doing what we ought to do that we would have enjoyed, that we would have learned something from. So the last video I was talking about, so when you turn a card and you don't know what to do with it, you say to yourself or you say to the questioner, I like this card because, and as you explain why you like the card or what you like about the card, the questioner is going to relate what you say in general terms to their own particular situation or condition. And I found myself talking about how if you watch a boxing match, you've got the commentator talking, describing the left jab, the right jab, whatever it happens to be. But there's also somebody else there, maybe a former boxer or a rival of the person boxing, who does color commentary and explains more detail about what's going on and why. And that's a bit like the reader is the commentator and the questioner, even though they're the questioner and you might think they're passive, they're actually taking what you tell them and they're relating it to their own personal experience and therefore getting more out of the reading that way. But it's just a point that I didn't know I was going to say that before I began talking. And it just sort of came to me and it seemed to make sense. So I just rambled on about it. And I think if everybody would pay more attention to what they think and take themselves a bit more seriously and not immediately. One of the things I was saying recently is there's two sides of the brain, the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere is creative and comes up with ideas and makes connections. The left side of the brain is critical and analytical. And we make the mistake, everybody does it. You come up with a good idea, which is the right brain, and then you immediately bring in the left side of the brain, the critical analytical part, to take it apart and explain why it's not going to work or why it's a bad idea or what's wrong with it or why you're out of your depths trying to even do that. Instead of have your ideas and write them down and go back to them a couple of days later, then assess them and analyze them. And you'll find that your life improves because you're paying attention to yourself and doing what you actually want to do. And because you're doing what you want to do, you're more motivated to actually do it instead of trying to follow somebody else's rules. So that's the kind of thing I talk about in videos that kind of begin and end with the tarot. And it's because the tarot is visual. You've got a card with a picture on it. And we live in a visual world and everybody can look at a road sign or a sign and obey or not obey or get something out of the sign. And so with the tarot, you're dealing with pictures and images and you make sense of them rather than try and figure out what they mean.
Well, there are signs all throughout life if you pay attention to them. I mean, a lot of them don't stand out to you. But if you're sitting there with a deck of tarot cards, of course you're looking for those signs. Is that correct?
So you sort of fade in and out.
Okay, is my audio bad? Let me see if I can. Is this any better?
Yep.
Okay. What I asked was, there's signs throughout life, throughout the day. So some of them we notice, most of them people don't even notice.
Yep.
But if you pay attention, you do notice these signs and they can lead you somewhere or to a train of thought, whatever the sign is for. But with the tarot, you're automatically looking for those signs that you're speaking about. Is that correct? I mean, doesn't that make a difference since you're actively searching for that sign?
I don't know if I would call it a sign. It's more poetic.
Okay.
Where when you read a poem, you're not looking for, you're trying to make sense of it or you're relating it. There's a quote from Kierkegaard that I came across and I've been mentioned a couple of times. And Kierkegaard, who was this Danish-Swedish philosopher, I can't remember when he lived, but he said, life is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. And that's kind of, I like that. And yeah. So when you pick a card, rather than trying to figure out what it means or what it, maybe you begin with what it looks like, what the picture looks like, and then use that as a starting point. Instead of having your own opinion about what's right and wrong or what's good and bad, you're beginning with a randomly selected image, and then you do something with it.
Well, and not a preconceived notion of what that image means before it even begins to make sense in your head.
I think what you're supposed to do is you look at the picture as if you'd never seen it before.
Sure.
But you've got a certain amount of understanding of life, let's say, and you take your current understanding and you apply it to the image that's on the card, and that leads you to the next step, or that leads you to the beginnings of the answer. If, so, assuming there was a question that was asked.
So the, let's just say the Nine of Wands, just pulling that out. If I drew that at 8 o'clock this morning, say I'm doing a one card draw, that Nine of Wands would have meant something at 8 o'clock this morning that would have, you know, would have intuitively come to me. At 9 o'clock tonight, that Nine of Wands could mean something completely different.
I think, and I've said this as in videos as well, a card doesn't mean anything until you ask it a question.
Sure.
So what was the question at 8 o'clock in the morning? Because a lot of people do a card a day. And so let's say you get the Nine of Battles and you think, okay, the deck that I use, the fellow's got a bandage around his head and some blood on it. So he's been injured. So maybe you look at the Nine of Battles and you think, watch out for accidents today. And so you're looking for what's going to verify what you began thinking, but that's really just confirming your own bias. So I think it makes more sense to begin with a question and then pick a card as the answer. But again, it's kind of, if I do a reading for somebody, I like them to pick a number between 1 and 9 and a number between 0 and 22. And that gives me two numbers, two major trumps that I can talk about. And what I find is the two numbers that the person chooses, even if they don't understand the symbolism of numbers, the two numbers that they choose orient themselves to their current situation in life. And that gives a starting point. Because that's the thing, we can say that this is wisdom, but what's wisdom at the end of a sequence and you're one step away from a solution is not wisdom that you need when you've only just begun the process. So I think that's why we really need a question, and then you pick a card as the answer to that question. So that you're right, I think that the nine of battens at 8 o'clock in the morning, see, I wouldn't actually do that. And mainly because I've kind of tried it and I don't know what to do with it. It may be an excellent idea. I just don't know what to do with it.
What do you mean?
Picking a card at random. I don't do that. What I suggest to people is, what you do is, for instance, you write down a typical question, like, will I get married? Or will I have a baby? Or what's going to happen at work? Then you shuffle the cards and you pick the top card, which could be the Nine of Battens. So we've got the question like, will I get married? The Nine of Battens. And you would do something with that particular card. And then you think the same question, will I get married? And you turn the next card and you figure out what kind of thing you might say if you got the Nine of Battens, or if you got the Two of Cups, or if you got the Hierophant. And so what you're doing is you're practicing on your own, but you're, I once read this, I can't remember where it was, but the Earth goes around the sun and has been going around the sun for who knows how long. But the first time the Earth went around the sun, it was digging a new path for itself. I forget why I was telling you that. But so it's just like what you do is you have a typical question. And then when you've got peace and quiet and you don't need to perform, then you would turn the Nine of Battens, and you would think about the kind of things that you might say to somebody who asks, will I get married? So with the Nine of Battens, you might see are you sure you want to get married?
Right.
Only because it looks like the person is on guard duty. So what are you guarding? Or else you need somebody who is totally reliable. You need somebody you can depend on, because if you need to be protected or feel the need for protection, you want to be sure that this other individual is going to be there for you. So that's the kind of thing that you might say as well, because if we want that card to describe the kind of person you will marry or you ought to marry, then it's somebody who's been through the mill, they've been injured, they've been damaged, but they've recovered from it. And that can be emotionally, spiritually, physically as well. Maybe they've had an operation. Maybe they were in a car crash. But they've been through it and they've survived and they've come out the other side of it and they're stronger because of it. And because nine can represent personal creative energy, it should be somebody who is energetic, skilled, who wants to explore, who wants to maybe learn different languages so they can become accomplished or become accustomed to other cultures and other types of people. And they aren't just narrow-minded and small-minded. And where I live, there's not so much now, but there used to be a really big Portuguese population. And there was one part of the town, not near the bus station, and they had these Portuguese men's clubs. And this is like 20 years ago. I would walk past, you got these men, they came from Portugal. They only speak Portuguese. They hang around with other Portuguese people. They ate Portuguese food. They drink Portuguese drinks. And it's as if they're still in Portugal. Why did they even come here? They could be expanding their horizons. And that I think is the kind of person the person would need, somebody who wants to explore, who's adventurous, who's energetic. So you don't want to marry a banker or an accountant, or, you know, you can also, by having an idea of the kind of person that suits you, you also know what kind of person doesn't suit you. Now, and so that's how I go about looking at cards.
Now, I want to back up just a little bit. There's two places I want to back up, but to begin with, you went into numerology. Let's pull on that thread. How often do you use that when doing readings? How often does numerology come into your reading?
I usually begin with the two numbers to give the person, the questioner, orientation.
Right.
But the thing is, I don't use numerology that much. I might, for instance, if it's one, let's say it's a magician card or the ace of something. Ace is a new beginning. So that's kind of numerology.
Sure.
And so
sure.
I would do it, and a 10 is one plus nothing gets you back to one again. So with a 10 card, you're in a transition period and you're finishing one cycle and about to begin a new one. And if the 10 is upside down, you finish the cycle, but if you don't assess what you've been through and figure out how it could have been better, then you'll take the past problems into the future with you because the card is upside down.
Sure.
So with the 10 of cups reverse, with the 10 of cups upright, a new beginning, new home, new family, a new starting point in a relationship. Whereas if the 10 of cups is upside down, then there ought to be a new beginning, but you're going to drag your heels or you're not going to want to face up to what didn't work. There's a line I really like. And have you ever seen The Walking Dead?
Sure.
Okay. So Glenn, if you remember Glenn, he was my favorite character.
Mine too. but my new favorite character is Negan. So I don't know.
I can't stand Negan.
Everybody says that he's my favorite bad guy.
No, I hate. Anyway, Glenn said at one point when he was looking to figure out what could go wrong, somebody said, "Why do you do that?" And Glenn's answer was, "I look to see what can go wrong, not because I expect it, but so I can prepare for it."
Exactly. Right. Right.
And that I think is a good point, that if you get a 10 reversed, it's in your interests to look at what's happened and figure out and identify what didn't work and then figure out a different way of handling it if it happens again. And if you, I think this is how it works, that if you are willing to learn the lesson, you don't need to have the lesson. But if you ignore something that's trying to get your attention and kid yourself or pretend that everything is okay, when deep down you know it isn't, if you close your eyes to it and try to move on, you'll drag it with you into the future. Whereas if you face the problem and not necessarily solve it, but figure out a different way of handling the situation, that changes what will happen. And often there's no need for it to happen because you've kind of solved the problem.
And that is why I wanted you to come on the show. You asked earlier, you don't know why you're here. Okay. It's these massive bits of life lessons that you give in your videos that I absolutely love. I've read Lenormand cards for a while.
Okay.
But I actually stumbled onto your videos and I've bought my tarot cards since. And I don't even open the book. And I'm pretty sure that I heard that from you. Intuitive. Try to do it intuitively first. And so that's what I've done. But I'm getting off track. Just watching your videos and not even thinking about the tarot. There's just so many large bits to chew on. And in fact, I want to back up before I forget. You had mentioned that you'd read somewhere that the Earth had a first time going around the sun. I want to hit on that. Can you open that up?
I think it was the idea that the first orbit of the Earth around the sun, it was really difficult because it had never done it before. But then this was connected with something and I cannot remember what it was, but it was just the idea that I just liked the idea. Imagine the Earth going around the sun for the first time. What must it have been like?
Well, the
journey of discovery and I don't know what.
Exactly. But when you said it, the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, the Earth has never gone around the sun in the same place twice. The sun's moving too.
That's right. And we're spinning at 3,000 miles an hour.
That's right. Okay. And then traveling through space at even faster speeds. I mean, I guess I'm no physicist. If you add all the speeds up together, there's somehow that you can figure that out. But no, we're flying through there, hanging on for dear life. But but the when you said that, I went immediately to you know, the sun's moving too. So the Earth is constantly dredging a brand new path. And I thought that was worth going back into because I knew you would have something to say about that. So this has gone a little deeper than probably about half the audience would like. So I want to back up to a more basic look at the tarot, or even if you want just divination, just simply divination. How do you process that? How do you open that? I mean, how do you look at that? You want me to ask a different way? Well, let me
tell you something.
Okay.
People have always, humanity has always wanted more information. We want answers. Yes. Let me tell you this story about when King Xerxes of the Persians was conquering Europe and the Middle East. He was about to invade Greece, and the leaders went to the oracle at Delphi and said, how can we defeat Xerxes? And the answer was, build a wooden wall and that'll defeat Xerxes. So it's easy to think, okay, what they meant was build a big wall and that'll keep him out. But because people are creative, the people who heard the answer, build a wall, sort of thought outside the box. And what they did was they built a fleet and cut off Xerxes' food supply and defeated him that way. So the answer was a wooden wall, but you can be literal or you can be creative. And I think maybe that's the fascination and the appeal of, it's a bit like poetry. There's a poem I read, In Liverpool in the 1960s, there was a group of poets called the Liverpool. This is when the Beatles came up and took over. But there was a group of poets called the Liverpool Poets. One of them was Paul McCartney's brother. Can't remember his name. And another one was called Adrian Henry. So I have to tell you this. In Britain in the 1960s, Kellogg's cornflakes were sold as the sunshine breakfast. And what you had was there was a bowl and cornflakes slowly were poured into the bowl. And this was beautiful. And you got the box and you got the sunshine. And it was called the sunshine breakfast. And Adrian Henry wrote a poem. And the poem was only a few lines. And the poem reads, "Without you, the sunshine breakfast is just cornflakes." So it sums, poetry will tell you, you can read it multiple times, the same piece of poetry, and get something out of it each time. And it'll add to you, and it'll add to the you that you've become since the last time you read it. And I think that's to divination as well. So you look at something and you see something you'd never, like me talking about color commentary in a boxing match. I'd never thought of that before, but it's like, there's always more, no matter what kind of situation you're in or how much you know, there's always more. I'll tell you about Bill Evans. Do you know about Bill Evans?
I don't think so.
Okay, so months ago, I thought one day, I don't like to use the word spiritual because I don't know what it means and most people don't know what it means. I need something. What does spiritual mean? So I used to watch a YouTube channel by a fellow called Kent Hewitt, and it was about jazz piano. And I always wanted to play the piano and I haven't yet, but I would watch Kent play the piano and talk about jazz and chords and music and so on. So I hadn't watched his I used to watch his channel all the time. And then I hadn't watched it for several months. So the day after I thought, what does spiritual mean? On YouTube video, you know, take a look at these things. It was Kent Hewitt. And I thought, okay, I'll take a look at Kent again. I haven't been there for a while. I click on Kent. He quotes Bill Evans, who played piano with Miles Davis, right, in the 60s. And then he's just a brilliant pianist. Even if you don't like piano music, you can appreciate how good he is. Bill said at one point, and Kent quoted him, and Bill said that for him, music is spiritual because the listener discovers something about themselves that they wouldn't have discovered had it not been for the music. And this was, and then it occurred to me, that's my definition of spiritual. Because it all began by me wondering, what does spiritual mean? The next day or 2 days later, I get an answer with Bill Evans that the spiritual and the spiritual path is always teaching you something new that you didn't know about yourself. And the thing is, there's no end to it. There's always something more to learn.
As long as you get out of your own way.
Yeah, don't censor yourself immediately.
Right.
Have the idea and write it down and review it a couple of days later and then see where you end up rather than doing as you're told. You know the expression, toe the line?
Right.
Okay, people toe the line. I spoke about this a little while ago with the lover's card. Mm-hmm. Because the lover's card shows it's in old decks, it used to be called the two paths. And it's about a young man standing at crossroads. And on one side is his wife, who represents new possibilities. And on the other side is his mother, who represents how he's been brought up. And it's a bit like the mother represents toe the party line. The wife represents do something for yourself. And I think what you just said about don't get in your own way. Yeah, don't get in your own way. If you can notice it, and I think that's part of the thing about pay attention to what you're thinking and don't immediately censor yourself or cut yourself off from yourself.
Yeah, I think they're...
And life will improve.
I think people have, the times that we're in, people, meditation is of course trending. So quietening your mind is trending. And I think people are doing that. Kind of what you're saying now is not what you were saying, but to go with what you're saying, they're quietening their mind. And I think that's the wrong way to look at that. There's a difference between quietening your mind and just stepping back and watching your thoughts.
Yep.
And paying attention to your own thoughts without necessarily trying to take part in those thoughts. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I think generally speaking, try it. Whatever comes to you, try it and see where it leads. If it leads to a good place, do more of it. If you discover you don't actually like it, stop doing it.
If it leads to a bad place, maybe pay attention to it.
That as well, yeah.
And let's see if there's something that we can repair there. Yeah. There, like you had said earlier, there instead of, you know, with the tin that you had mentioned earlier. Let's repair it now. And so we don't have to come around to it again. So if it leads to a bad place, then pay attention to that and make the repairs that you can make.
Yes, repairs that you can make. Not everything has to be perfect, like no. 2 seconds from now, which is the kind of, maybe the kind of things that parents told you or teachers told you, and you have unrealistic expectations. But just one, you know, I saw a cartoon on, I never look at Facebook, but there was one I happened to notice where there were two ladders side by side, and one person, there was just a small space between each rung, and the person was at the top of the ladder. And on the right-hand side, there was a person, and the ladders had like a huge space between each rung, and the person was still on the ground jumping up to try and grab the first rung of the ladder. Right. So small steps,
right?
And then see where you end up.
Break the problem into small chunks.
Yeah,
bite size chunks.
Yeah, there's a James Clear, I think his name is, has a book about the power of compound interest or something like that. If you take small steps and if you improve yourself by like 1% a day, at the end of a year, you're a totally different person. Instead of looking to be 100% different tomorrow, even one 1% of improvement every day will transform you.
Well, sure. And you know, if you're able to do that, then of course you're going to improve either way.
Yeah, and I think that's to go back to the beginning. If you viewers get a piece of paper and cut it or tear it into 22 different pieces, and write the numbers 0 to 22 on the numbers on the piece of paper, so that they can then take the first 9, 1 to 9, and scrunch them up and throw them on the floor and pick one card, one number. And that will give them a number of a major trump that they can find on the internet that will give them a pictorial representation of where they're at. Then they do the same for 0 to 22. 0 is the fool and 22 is the fool, beginning and the end. And right. To choose a random piece of paper with a number on it and then read about those two cards, and it will give them an idea about where they are right now. And because they know they've got a clearer picture of where they are right now, then they can know how to proceed. So if you're at a creative space, do creative things. But if you're having to clean up messes, now is just what you said. If you don't like where you're going, figure out why not. And so for a person like in that kind of situation, what's right for them and relevant for them is going to be different for what's right and relevant for somebody who's in a more confident, optimistic, creative space. And you get that from the number, let's say 1 in 19, the magician and the sun. Whereas if you choose 6 for the lovers, the two paths, and 16 for the tower, it means you're at crossroads. if you don't dismantle what you've got and clean it up and reassemble it, you're going to be left with a mess. And so if I hear that and I know that my relationships are in trouble, I know what you're talking about. I've got to look at my relationships. Whereas if I'm miserable at work, then I know I've got to clean up my work situation and maybe do something different or ask for a raise or go to a different department or something that makes sense, because I know the details. I'm the color commentator and you're the commentator. You've told me you're at crossroads, clean it up or you're going to be left with a mess. And then it's up to me to relate the general information to my particular specific situation and do something sensible with it. And then remember what you said. If you discover that where you're going isn't comfortable, figure out why not.
Figure out why not, or figure out where else to go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope everybody's taking notes, because I love what you said right there with the pieces of paper. That's wonderful. I have never thought of that before. And
it's just a lot of people don't have decks.
Right.
But the thing is, even though people don't understand the symbolism of numbers, there's a wise part of everybody that knows everything, I think. There's a wise part of the man in the street that knows what's really going on. Because there's what appears to be going on and what's really going on. And poetry talks about what's really going on rather than the surface impression that people have. And the tarot will tell you about the underlying reality or the alternative possibilities that exist that are creative rather than, I don't know, boring and kill you slowly but surely. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Well, like I said, I hope everybody's taking notes, because that is really good. This is my first interview, so I'm sure you know that by now. I'm making that first time around the sun as we speak, and grudging through this as well as I can, without notes, without anything, just a conversation between me and John.
I think spontaneity is a good thing.
You've
got knowledge and experience of something. I don't know what, but you know what I mean? It's not like you're 5 years of age. If you're a five-year-old trying to interview somebody, it's not going to work. But when you bring your experience and your observations and what you've learned over the years to a conversation, it's going to move the conversation forward.
You do that to me. Every time I have a question in my head, you give me another chunk of wisdom, and something leaves me every time. But that's okay. That's okay. Tell me about, if you don't mind, tell me about your class. I'd like to hear about that. How does that work? If somebody wanted to join that, how would that go day to day?
It's more like I give you everything you need and let you work through it at your own speed and in your own way. And then if you get stuck, email me and I'll type a reply, or I'll talk and send an MP3. But the thing is that you get so much, because you get, I don't know how many videos in the membership site, johns-tarot-course.com. So you get access to all the videos there, and there's one for every card. There's also videos about how to get to know cards, how to read them, how to read a Celtic cross, a yes, no spread, and various things about, which I think are more valuable than just picking a card a day and trying to make sense of it. Then you also get bonus material. You get the 42 videos on how to read past, present, and future spread in detail. You get a book that's on Kindle called The Tarot Guide. The Tarot or Guide.
That was my next, you're bringing me to my next question. Is the, is the, because I know you have a book, and I was wondering, is that part of the class as well?
Well, I've got this book, this website called thetarotbook.com, mm-hmm. but I'm turning that into a Kindle, but you get a copy of the contents of the tarot book as well. You also get 78 audio files. I used to have a website years ago, and it was called Your Own Free Tarot Reading. And so I put together 78 audio files, MP3s. And so you picked a card at random. You've got your question, you pick a card at random. And I talk about what any of the 78 cards could mean when it in three types of typical questions: love and romance, money and work, and how to make yourself better. And so I look at each card from the point of view of answering any of those three basic types of questions, and you get all those MP3 files as well.
No, so
I just sort of include that, and it's a download, and you download it, and it's used to listen to.
Well, if you are those free on the site?
If no, not,
okay.
They were once upon a time, but okay. It didn't work out. I'd hoped that I would put it up there and people would get in touch and ask and comment, and I would get a bit of conversation going, but nobody responded. So I thought, I'll take it down.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if somebody was tearing their papers up, their numbers, and throwing them in the floor, that would be a great place to go.
Or else send me an email and I'll give you something back. I'll give you a copy of the Kindle book, which is about the major trumps in the writer deck and gives like detailed explanations and descriptions of the 22 major trumps.
Now, the writer deck, is that your favorite? I mean, do you have more than one deck?
I used to have three decks. Three. I've only got one now. The writer deck is the only one. It depends what you want. If you want to be able to read cards and make sense of them and give actual answers to people's real questions, you can do it with the writer deck. I don't think you can do it with any other deck.
No.
And also what's valuable about the writer deck, there's a picture. And so if I look at the Crowley deck and I've got the eight of batons or the nine of batons, all I see on all the questioner sees is nine batons on a piece of paper or a piece of card. Whereas with the rider deck, we've got somebody on guard duty in front of a stockade and he's got a bandage and there's blood there. So you've got a picture and then the questioner can look at that picture and see what I'm saying, but they can also see more, or they can see more personal, relevant things for them in that one. They also understand that maybe this card is in the future, so they know they should be careful. Watch out that this doesn't happen, or if you think, okay, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that it's going to work out, it's not. Or I'm going to do something risky and dangerous because I'm 22 and I think I'm immune to problems, as we all did when we were 22, which is why we all drove too fast and all the rest of it. So if you get that in abundance for your future and you're 22, slow down. You just pay attention to the road, the what's going on the road. Otherwise, not that I'm predicting disaster, but it's just you could end up, remember Superman used to fly backwards around the world and go back in time. Okay, that's what you want to do, maybe, if you get the nine of batons. Again, it depends on the question and the questioner and the two numbers that they choose and various other cards that come up. It's not so much just one thing. I think it's more, what's the general atmosphere that the person is existing in at the moment? And if the atmosphere is a little bit iffy and maybe a little bit that you're bored and you're going to do something. I remember my daughter when she was five or in grade five came back home at lunchtime, and she told me something bad that happened in school that day, and it was at lunchtime. And I said to her, I'm going to tell you the three most important words that anybody is ever going to tell you, and those three words are to things you have to remember: people are stupid. people think they act from intelligence and reason, and we know what we're doing, but most people's actions are just knee-jerk reactions. So I told my daughter this so that she understood that the people that who had given her a hard time weren't actually acting that intelligently. And she was assuming that they were acting intelligently. The other thing for her to remember is she also occasionally does stupid things. I mean, we're all guilty of being stupid, but it was more the point that, not that I want to be harsh with people, but more it's what you said before, don't get your own way.
Well, and
that's the same kind of idea. People are stupid. We're capable of great intelligence and great creativity and invention and so on. But most of the time we don't act that way. We're not, potentially we're all Leonardo da Vinci. Maybe, even though we're not, but maybe we are, maybe humanity is capable of that. But most of the time, we're not Leonardo.
Well, as you said before, there's wisdom in all of us.
I think there is. But we can tap it, yeah, and pay attention to it and honor it and value it instead of just having knee-jerk reactions.
If we weren't so busy trying to overanalyze,
that's the left side of the brain again.
Things that don't matter at all.
Well,
we could free up time,
yeah,
to pay attention to the wisdom that's running in there parallel with everything else.
Let me tell you this. Uh-huh. Again, you people might enjoy this. This I got from Tom Ferry, who's a real estate person in California, and his motto is business by design, not from memory. And so he coaches people on how to develop a real estate business. And one of the first things he has them do is, he says it's most important that they become clear about what they care about, what they value. Because when you know what you care about, you're going to be motivated to actually get things done. So you get 2 sheets of paper. On sheet one, you draw a vertical line down the middle. And on one side of the line, you make a list of what you want more of. And on the other side of the line, you make a list of what you want less of. On the second sheet of paper, you make a list of a little vertical line down the middle. On one side of the paper, on one side of the line, you write what you want to start doing. And on the other side of the line, what you want to stop doing. And so you put items on the list, and then you look at them and make sure that they actually belong. And let's say it's something you think you want more of. Then you realize, when I was 25, I wanted more of it. Now I don't. So you end up with a clear picture of what you care about and what you value. That is what you can build on. That related to something you just said about, I can't remember what you said about getting in your own way, or yes, it was something beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's just that if people know, if you know what you care about and you've got the choice of doing something that will add to what you want, do it. If you want, there's something you don't want and you're sure that you really don't want it, and something happens, it gives you the chance to get more of what you don't want, don't do it.
Right.
And then you end up...
It's so simple.
Well, it sort of is, but can you be alert enough to pay attention to what you're thinking and what you're doing? Because a lot of people will think something in the morning and then they think something the opposite in the afternoon. And then they wonder why they're contradicting themselves, but they don't realize it. And then they wonder why things aren't happening.
Well,
if you write it all down, it's easier to spot when you're contradicting yourself if you've got words written in a piece of paper in front of you. If you keep it in your head and work from memory, it's not going to work. Because Tom's motto is business by design. So you figure it out and you write it down and you make notes and you get in touch with your own wisdom. That was what you were talking about.
Right.
How do you know it's wise? Because you came up with it and you've thought it through and you've made sense of it. So it works for you. And you end up doing what you care about and getting what it is that you actually want, instead of accepting second best because you think you're not worth it. You've figured out you are worth it.
Even accepting second best because of your mental habits.
Yeah.
Not allowing you to see anything else.
But if people take the time to write stuff down and come up with the four lists, and that, it should be what you actually
that alone want. Breaks your mental habits that you've been that yeah. you, I mean that's just that's throwing a wrench in the spokes. You're stopping your routine, your mental routine that most people don't even realize they have. Just to write things down, and that focuses your awareness. I think that goes on to
it has to be honest as well. If you honestly want, I don't know, a Ferrari or a Rolls Royce, then you honestly want it, put it on your list. But if you don't really want a Ferrari, then you know you don't really want a Ferrari. Because that's
do you want a Ferrari, or do you want people to see your Ferrari? Well, I think you have to ask the right questions too.
That's right. And if you write it all down, it's gonna come to you. So pay attention to what you're thinking and what sense you make of the items on your list. And you realize something about you. It goes back to Kierkegaard. Life is a mystery to be lived.
Yes.
So the items in the list are part of you, your mystery, or your version of the mystery that life is. So it's not a problem to be solved anymore. It's like Glenn, I figured out the worst, not because I'm expecting it, but so I can be prepared for it.
You just don't like Negan.
Don't like Negan. Well, he was so disgusting in the beginning.
He was, but has he not grown on you at all?
No.
Have you seen him on any other television shows?
And I also don't understand why somebody didn't shoot him. Remember those interminable gun battles?
Oh, I
don't know where they get all the bullets from.
I don't.
Armored vehicles, and everybody's firing, like the thousands of rounds of ammunition being fired, and nobody gets injured. One person gets, a bullet in the shoulder. Why did nobody kill him? Negan came out and stood in front of that building, and Rick's there with a gun. I know it's a TV show, and you have to keep the story going. But
no, you're right. But I think that's I think that can go into what we've been talking about, even Negan and Rick. That is two sides of oneself. Is that not?
Okay, we can't forget that Negan killed Glenn and he killed Abraham.
Yes.
At that point.
But Glenn and Abraham that we knew. What about the people that Rick have killed? And I think Negan said that before too. What about the people you have killed?
I know.
Just because we as the viewers didn't know them personally, like we think we do, makes them less important.
I know, but I don't care.
You don't care. Don't mess with my entertainment. Fair enough.
Yeah, that's like in, did you ever see Collateral, the movie?
Well,
Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx?
Yes, that's been years ago.
At the beginning of it, when the first Tom Cruise, the killer, kills the first fellow, and Jamie Foxx is shot because the body falls on top of his taxi.
Right.
And Tom Cruise says, "What do you know this person? What do you care? There's all these people, millions of people die in Africa every day. You don't care about them. Why are you worried about this fellow that I just killed?" So it's just like you're saying, Rick, we forget about all the people that Rick killed. But the thing is, we've got to know Rick and we've become his friend over several seasons.
Sure.
But I take your point. I think that's the point about the tarot and about everything. It's all about moral philosophy. Right. If you need to have an idea of what's the right thing to do in a particular circumstance, and have you thought it through, and are you willing to pay the price of doing or not doing? But I think it all boils down to moral choice. Do you do what's logical, or do you do what's right? There's a movie called The Winslow Boy, a black and white movie, came out in the 30s with Robert Donat as he played a lawyer, but there was this young cadet, naval cadet, was accused of stealing some money from another cadet, and it became a big scandal and went to the House of Lords in England and so on. But at one point, at the end, Robert Donat's point was, and it wasn't so much justice, but he said, let right be done. And just that idea to, in connection with the justice card, what's just, what's the just thing to do? And maybe we ought to be thinking, what's the right thing to do? That ties in with our values. And that goes back to the list. What are our values? What do we care about? Right. And if we've got a clear idea of what we care about, then we can make moral choices. But if we don't know what, why we're thinking the way we think, or why we're ignoring that nagging thought that keeps coming into our mind, and we know we ought to, but we can't be bothered, or it's a lot of, in a lot of ways, it's all about morality. And so Rick and Negan, two sides of the same coin. And yeah.
There's balance. Yeah. And I think just as you said with the morality, I think a person's moral compass is probably just as unique as their fingerprint.
Yep.
So
I mean, we can share things in common, but when it really ends up with how do you live each day? How do you live each moment? And we've got our own little choices and big choices that we make.
Yes.
It's a bit like your point about the sun is moving as well. So we're going around the sun, but everything's moving.
Yeah, we're used to it. We know our path.
So are we.
It's brand new all the time.
Yeah.
I mean,
anything we've already
traveled through is behind us.
That's right. Every minute is different. Yeah. May not be radically different or very different, but it's still different. There was this Egyptian idea that the present moment is the meeting point of an infinite past and an infinite future. And so I imagined a cross, an X shape, which reminded me of the Wheel of Fortune, which is what the Wheel of Fortune can be about. You've got the present moment between an infinite past and an infinite future. And so if it's upright, then things are going the way we want them to go. If it's upside down, again, is it past, present, or future? But you do something else with it.
I know there's a lot of people that don't read the reversed,
yep.
as you were just saying. But you do.
Well,
okay. You do. Is there a reason? Is there a reason for that?
There are delays in life. There are glitches. How can you turn a card and know if it's going to be a glitch? If the card is upside down, imagine what the glitch could be. Or if it's the sun upright, if it's the sun reversed, am I going to get the promotion? The sun reversed. Yes, but it's going to take longer than you think. There's a delay.
So it doesn't just take a negative and turn, or a positive and turn it into a negative. It's not the polar opposite.
No.
It's just a...
Again, it depends on the question.
Sure.
I spoke in the last video about the devil card, where you get the man and the woman chained around their neck to attach to this half stone cube, and the devil's on top. So if the question is, will I get married, and you get the devil reversed, be careful about who you marry. But if the person's been talking about how they can't decide what they want to do, then the devil's a good card, because somebody else is making the decisions for them. So they're going to have a period of time where they don't have to make decisions, so they can relax. So it's a good card. So we can't look at a card as being good or bad that way. You can only look at it, or you can look at it and think, I like this because, or I don't like it because. But then you're relating the question and the imagery in the card. So let's say somebody wants to know, will I get a promotion? And you get the sun card, and they say, and you tell them, yes, you will. It's a good card. You're going to get the promotion. But they don't get it when they thought they were going to get it. There's a delay. And they get it 3 months later. But in the meantime, they thought, the reader was wrong. I didn't get the promotion.
Right.
Whereas if the card is upside down, you're warning the people, take your time, relax. Things will work out, yes. But it's a bit like you take two steps forward, one step back, then you can take two steps forward again. But how else can you get delays and see that from cards? Or how can you get glitches? Because those things happen in life.
Well, let's open up glitch. Let's take the same situation with somebody looking for a promotion or wondering about a promotion. You draw the Sun card reversed. So if you look at that as a glitch, maybe it's not the promotion that they're wanting that they get.
That's right. And so as you look at the card and talk, then you're going to touch on what the, because I could look at that same card and say, it's the Sun is the boss. You don't like the boss, or you wouldn't like the boss, or the boss would like you, or you would be put in a position where you have to fire people and do what the boss does, and you don't like to do it. So there are all sorts of ways that the glitch could manifest.
Sure.
And so you talk, give a couple of, this goes back to the earlier time of, think of a question, pick a card. What might you say about that card? And that's like every time you pick a new card with a different question or the same question, and you come up with something else to say, that's like the earth going around the sun for the first time.
Right.
Because you haven't thought of that idea before with that particular card, with that question. And there's huge, infinite number of questions or infinite number of things you could say or you might say to the person. Not just one or two.
That brings me to another question. So is it the card, the spirit of the card, or is it the reader?
It's the person who asks the question who already knows the answer.
I see.
Who's causing the cards to come up that the reader then interprets and tells them what they already know, but they weren't consciously aware of. That's one answer. I don't think these are cards. It's a piece of cardboard.
Sure.
They're not living beings, whereas we are. So I think it has to do with the questioner having some kind of dialogue, invisible dialogue with the questioner, with the reader. And that caught, think of the times when you were looking for something in a book, let's say it was a sentence or a paragraph or a point that you read, and you look through and you can't find it. And then you give up and you open the book at random and there's the sentence you were looking for.
Right.
How does that happen? Because it happens. And so in the same way, the questioner knows what they need to know. And in some way, the subconscious mind or whatever part of the reader shuffles and the cards come up, or else it doesn't matter what cards come up, they make sense of them in a way that talks to the questioner. If they let themselves go and just talk and don't censor themselves and don't inhibit themselves and don't think, I'm not very good at this or anything like that. You look at the card, do I like it? Yes, because, and you talk about why you like it or what you would do in that kind of circumstances. And it's a conversation between you and the questioner.
That's how I've read for myself. Like I said before, I don't open a book. So when I draw a card, I draw three cards. Whatever I draw, it's not the meaning of the card. It's what I see on the card in the moment. My wife and I like to read together, and a lot of times we'll see something completely opposite. Maybe they're parallel with each other. Maybe the two of us come up with something completely different on the card.
Perhaps because you're two different people.
Well, sure, but we're asking the same question about the same situation.
Okay.
So, we're two different people, but we can put both of our insight into what's specific card, and we get something else completely different. And it's amazing. When it happens, it's amazing. It the feeling is great. But, there are people that see the cards as more than just a card, more than just a tool. I know I've seen your videos on taking care of your cards, you know, respecting your cards, wrapping them in silk, shuffling them properly, things, you know, storing them properly, things like that. But, you know, you've had your cards. I've seen your videos. I mean, you've got, I think there's 12 years of videos there, or 11.
I don't know.
It's something like that. There's a lot of content on there, but mostly you're using the same deck of cards.
I started using them in 1981. See, that particular deck.
And so by respecting that deck, you're still using the same deck.
Well, you go to a machine shop and somebody's got their spanners and their wrenches and they're all clean.
Right.
And they're nicely put away because you look after, if you look after things, then they'll look after you as well, I suppose. But yes, you may as well be careful and respectful. I once likened the tarot to the high priestess or wise old lady. Mm-hmm. So you don't drag the wise old lady around. You're nice to her and respect her and take care of her and hope that, and she'll do the same for you. As I've said recently, we get back what we give out.
Right, right.
So what are you getting at?
So as far as the question of the cards, a tool for the person, or the card in other words, you would see it as an archetype more than a literal spiritual tool. It is more of an archetypal. Am I on the right track there?
I think for me, archetype's too Jungian. And I tend not to use the word archetype. So I don't know what, the tarot is art. Have you ever played with the letters in the word tarot? T-A-R-O-T, it's art.
Yes.
It's rot. It's tor, which means tower. And so, you know, it's all of those things. I don't know if it's a particularly, because if you're into archetypes, then it's about archetypes. But if you go back to the Greeks who built a fleet and cut off Xerxes' supply lines and won the battle. So for them, build a wooden wall. It's not literal. They just sort of don't know what they did. I think it's the same. It's a mystery to be lived.
It was an archetypal wall. I mean, am I wrong? By building the fleet that they built, or the
it's too Jungian, only because it's too Jungian. And Jung is fine, but Jung spoke French and German and English and Greek and Latin, and did all this reading, whereas modern unions don't. So it's a bit like, if you want to go to all the first sources that Jung did, then you become Jung-ish. But if you don't read French, German, English, Greek, and Latin, you're not really talking about what Jung was talking about, I think.
No. No, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think we probably throw a lot of words around like that we really don't look at the meaning as.
I think what you do is you instead of starting off with an idea of what the tarot is, you sort of get to know it, and then you know what it is. Because rather than start with an idea that it's a tool, because if I say it's a tool, you've got the idea it's a hammer, it's a chisel, it's a wrench, it's something that you apply to fix something or to change something or to gouge out a piece of something or other. But I don't know if a tarot is a tool in that kind of a way. So I think what you do is, with poetry, you just read the poems, read Shakespeare and see what you get out of it, and read it again and get more out of it. There's a bit I did ages ago, and I don't, but Romeo and Juliet begins, two households, both alike in dignity, from ancient grudge, break to new mutiny. So two households, it doesn't say, a household means everybody belongs to the different family and they're people who they employed and their allies. So it's a household, it's a whole village of people against another village of people, and they both think that they're equally correct. So you can look at a statement of just a few lines, and then it's from ancient grudge. It wasn't just a grudge, it was an ancient grudge. People probably had forgotten why they even didn't like each other. It was so old. It was an ancient grudge. Break to new mutiny. It's a mutiny. They're against the captain, who in this case would be the heads of the houses. So you get so much in a few words that sets the scene and gives you, it's not just a house, it's not just families, it's a household. And if you stop and think, well, what's a household? Then you get the beginnings of the idea of what Romeo and Juliet is going to be about. And I think it's the same with the tarot or with any piece of poetry or with lots of things, that if you give yourself time to get to know it, you end up knowing what it's like rather than start off thinking that you know. As I said, if we start with an idea of what we think it is, we're going to see proof, but all it's going to be is confirmation bias. That's one thing I hate about astrology and people who talk about astrology nowadays. They don't, it's not astrology. It's their own opinion. And then they find apparently astrological proof of it. And it's the wrong way around. They start off with them and fit astrology into themselves instead of recognizing that astrology is infinitely big and we need to connect with it.
I have my favorite book on astrology. It's Ryan Crosswell, A Scheme of Heaven. Have you ever read that?
Don't know it.
A Scheme of Heaven. I forget the author's name. I forget a lot of things. My memory is terrible. But he hates astrology. He not necessarily hates astrology. He's a skeptic. He doesn't believe in astrology. But it's the best book on astrology I've ever read. So,
okay.
Just like you're saying, it depends on the perspective. You can take any perspective and form it to where it is important to the subject. That didn't make as much sense as I wanted to. I'm trying to find the words that I need here. Even reading about astrology, if I go to the store and I'm going to buy a book on astrology, of course, I probably don't want a book about astrology written by a guy that doesn't believe in astrology.
Okay.
Yet, I bought the book, and it's my favorite book about astrology. So even a perspective that I wouldn't necessarily agree with gives me a view on the subject that I wouldn't have ever thought of before.
Okay.
And strengthens my curiosity about the subject. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think that a major difficulty is confirmation bias. We see what we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with the tarot, I didn't know what I was going to say about the tarot tonight, because am I a tarot reader? I kind of know how to read cards, but I don't really consider myself. A tarot reader sounds like a fortune teller. And I can do fortune telling, but it's not really what I do particularly, even though I sometimes do.
Well, I want to pull that thread.
What's that?
I want to pull that thread. Fortune telling. Tell me about that. You started it.
Well, it's more like predicting the future. Or, well, I can't quite think. I don't know what to say about fortune telling. But it's more like... The tarot is kind of infinitely big. And so I have a certain grasp of some of it. But it's really, okay, as I was told a long time ago, astrology is about extraterrestrial knowledge. Whereas the tarot was developed by man for man, not men and women, but the tarot was developed by mankind for mankind. So we can all understand the tarot, Hardly anybody can understand astrology because it's extraterrestrial knowledge, whereas the tarot is about human, earth-centered, everyday life stuff.
The astrology is the, well, tarot is within, to where astrology is the without, as above, so below.
Sure, okay.
So.
Although astrology is also within.
Well, and that's what I was going to get to. That was my next question is, would you agree that both would also be within and without? Because if you believe that everything is one, I believe everything is one. Okay. So with that belief, yes, the within and the without would be the same.
I think they're telling you different things. They're giving you different types of answers. Astrology is good for knowing when, giving you dates. The tarot isn't so good, or it doesn't happen so easily. Whereas with astrology, and also you can do horoscope spreads in a tarot, using a tarot.
Right, right.
So, I'm always against people mixing astrology and the tarot. Really? I hate these people, I don't hate, but when I see people on Facebook or on a YouTube channel calling themselves astrologer and tarot reader, I immediately turn away.
Is it because you don't like the way that they view astrology, or you don't think that astrology has a place in tarot?
Both.
Okay. I want to look at astrology and tarot. Why does it? Because I know a lot of people would probably argue that point. So
I know.
So a lot, I want to hear your side.
A lot of people say you shouldn't use reverse cards, but
right. Well, a lot of people say that you shouldn't buy your own first deck.
Well, I know that's another piece of nonsense.
A lot of people say a lot of things.
I know. So I think that it depends what you mean by astrology, and people don't really practice astrology.
Okay, well, let's start with that. What would your definition be?
It's extraterrestrial knowledge.
In other words,
okay. It's a whole. Okay, astrology is like a beach, a sandy beach, with an infinite number of grains of sand on the beach, and that's what you're dealing with. It's unmanageable, whereas the tarot is manageable. I think that's the difference between, well, that's never said that before, but I think that's, I would say that's the difference between them. One is manageable and the other isn't, unless you're very special, unless you get a very particular birth date that shows, this is the thing. If astrology is valid, which it is, people who call themselves astrologers don't know what in their own chart makes them astrologers. They just don't know. They've never looked. Because how you learn astrology is you take one point. Remember, there's a billion grains of sand on the beach. There are a billion factors to consider in any particular chart. So what you do is, for instance, the seventh house shows the marriage partner and whether you'll get married or not, and how if you'll get married and divorce, right? So what you do is, you know, the seventh house describes the marriage partner. So what you do is you get 10 charts of famous people and you look at you study just their seventh house, and you read about them and you discover there were Elizabeth Taylor married 7 or 8 times, Mickey Rooney 7 or 8 times. Whereas Angelina Jolie married once, twice.
I believe. I know.
Whatever. Okay, so what you do is you've got basically accurate horoscopes for these different people, and you can get them at astro.com as well as books. So you study 10 charts, and all you're doing is looking to understand, did they marry and what happened in marriage? And then you look at 50 charts, and all you're doing again is looking at the seventh house and the different factors involved. And then when you've done 500 charts, you've begun to understand marriage. That's just one out of thousands of different points to consider. And that's how you learn astrology. It takes time and it's very hard going. But you take one point, you work it to death, so to speak, and you learn an awful lot in the process. Then you look at a different house. So that's whereas with the tarot, you're looking at a picture and you can do what you want and make of the picture what you want, what makes sense. In the last video, I talked about the sun card, because in the rider deck, you've got a child sitting on a horse holding a banner and there's a wall behind them. So I can look at the picture and say, I like this card because there's a child and the child represents newness and beginnings and excitement. Whereas somebody else could look at the card and say, I like this card because there's a horse in it. So the horse is going to do the work. You just have to sit in the back of the team or sit in the back of the company and it'll transport you. You can add or contribute if you want, but you don't have to. And that suits some people. So it's the same card. We're just making, I'm looking at a different part, but I'm talking differently about the same card. I could think back to you and your wife. You and your wife could both look at the sun card. You see the child and think excitement and newness. Your wife looks at the card and maybe sees the banner and does something with the banner. This is public recognition. Or maybe she looks at the wall and says, what happened in the past stays in the past and doesn't have to affect the present. Because that's what the wall can mean. So anybody can look at a tarot card and get something good out of it or make good sense out of it just because we're human and people are creative and people can do things. You cannot look at a horoscope and do something with it.
All you can do, I mean, not all you can do, but one of the biggest things I got from the book I was telling you about is you're taking a snapshot of the sky and saying every time this happens, some of these things happen too.
And possibly, but also remember what you said with the sun's moved on. So
exactly. So none of it's in the same space. It's behind us.
Yeah. And also every moment is different.
Sure.
Every 1 minute, the degree and the ascendant changes. So it's a different chart.
Well, every 7 years, we're not the same person as we were 7 years prior. So how does that figure into the chart?
Well,
we have a whole new set of cells.
Transits of Uranus. But you've also got every 28 days, your skin changes.
Sure, yeah.
Every once a day, your stomach lining is replaced.
Well, like I said, in 7 years, you don't have a single cell in your body that was the same.
Yeah.
Right. So do you have a new birth chart? No, you don't have a new birth chart. So no, I would tend to agree. I know a lot of people use astrology in their tarot. I would tend to agree with what you're saying though. I think there's probably a lot fewer that do it correctly than
It's sort of asking for trouble as well. I think playing with astrology when you don't really know what you're talking about. Sure. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say, talk like this, but I had a good astrology teacher, but most people don't.
Well, your average 22-year-old on YouTube that is talking about astrology probably.
Your average 50-year-old talking on YouTube. Yeah. Although I take your point.
Yeah. I mean, at least the 50-year-old has enough time to at least have the verbiage that they need to fool you.
I guess. I know.
Well, I think we've been on here about an hour.
Okay.
I know it's late. I want to, you don't have a print copy of your book, correct? I mean, if somebody wanted to go to Amazon or go to your website and buy an actual hold in your hand. But correct me if I'm wrong, you learned to do book binding at one point in your life.
Yep.
But your book doesn't come in print.
I've got a couple of copies, that hard copies, hardback copies that I made. It had to do with printing costs, because in order to do it in those days, this is like 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and in those days you needed thousands of dollars to a printer, and then you've got to store them, and then you've got to mail them, and then mailing became, so I'm going to set up a new one, the Tarot book, that will be available as a paperback. So there'll be a Kindle version and there'll be a paperback version, and that's, you can buy the paperback from Amazon.
That's the one I want. That's the one I want. I will definitely look for that.
And I'll see if I can do something about the a paperback version of the Tarot guide. The Tarot, our guide on the open road.
Well, that, I guess
that's a quote from Walt Whitman about being on the open road. And think of it, we're on an open road, right? And the Tarot is going to be our guide. I quite like that.
I do as well. I do as well, because you will reach forks in the road, and you will reach.
True. Yeah.
You will reach then, crossroads on your path.
That's right. And then it's always a moral dilemma. Oh, what do we do?
Yeah. That is great. That is great. I like that too. I like that as well. Well, I guess everybody knows where to find you. Can you? YouTube. YouTube is where I have found you.
If you go to YouTube and type in John Ballantrae, you'll find videos and see what you think. I've got an email address here. You can email me and I'll do something with it. I'll reply
I will stick that in the show notes. I'll stick a link to your YouTube channel in the show notes. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the audience as far as how to contact you, or if you even want to be contacted, you tell me.
If you put the email address in,
sure,
BLLNTR@yahoo.com.
Sure, okay.
And then we'll take it from there. See, I've been wondering about a mailing list, but then I think I can't be bothered with mailing lists. Mm. If people want to find me, they'll make the effort to find me, rather than be on a mailing list and I just randomly mail people out stuff that they may not be interested in anymore. So I'd rather keep my fingers crossed and trust the cosmos that the people that are going to find me will find me. And I don't have to go and make them pay attention to me. It's up to them to be motivated to look in this direction.
Right. Without the motivation, it wouldn't do them much good anyway, would it?
No.
So I do have to agree with that. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. I'm so glad I had you on tonight.
Thank you very much. Well, it was interesting to talk to you.
It was great. It was great. I really appreciate it. And maybe we can have you on again sometime.
Sure.
So, well,
I'll be in touch by email with a couple of things and we can take it from there.
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Are you in Seattle?
No, I'm in Arkansas.
Oh, okay. I thought you were out west.
No.
Okay.
No, well. I like the area. I've been out there once. I love it up there. But no, I am.
And you said something about, was it a grandchild, kindergarten?
I have a few grandchildren.
Good.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you. That's I'm assuming you have grandchildren.
I have one. Who's a boy who's 7 and a half.
And so would you agree that they're better than the children?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. They make it all worth it.
There's something great about children. And it's interesting to see them when they're little. Again, and this time you know what you're doing because you've had children, but grandchildren are just interesting.
And they can be a lot like the children that you raised.
Yep.
And that's what's odd about it. So it's almost like a do-over. We're back to 10.
Yeah.
1 + 0. Yeah. It's back to 1. Okay. But it's got a little twist in it. They're not exactly the same. All the old tricks work.
There's a zero factor as well to be incorporated.
That's right. Yeah. Not all the old tricks are still going to work. You still have to stay on your toes.
Yeah.
Yes,
well, that was nice to speak to you. Thanks for that.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you again. I enjoyed it.
Okay, good.
All right, well, thank you. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.